Good morning, Southern Maine. Morning, Portland. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM and also WLOBRadio.com. It is March 7th, Saturday.
Yes.
It's good to be here. How are you doing, Deb?
Good. How are you?
Never been happier.
Great.
You know why?
Tell me.
You know where I'm going to be in 24 hours?
Oh, that's right. You're going to Maui.
No, we like to say here today, gone to Maui.
Well done.
I will be in Maui tomorrow.
Nice.
So aside from just kind of, you know, talking about my vacation plans, mm-hmm. we have to let the listening audience know. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to totally abandon them.
No.
Over the next 2 weeks, best of Steve-O.
That's right.
Right here in WLOB.
That's
at 11:06 a.m., right?
Yep.
Couple of quick announcements before we get, boy, what an interview we have in just a few minutes.
Oh,
just
yes.
Like less than 1 minute. Dan Foley from Survivor.
Yep.
Lives in Gorham. The guy spent like a decade trying to get on Survivor, and it's now, I think, in the second, third episode this season. Really interesting guy. It was
yes.
a fun interview we did a few minutes ago, so that's coming up. Also, want to announce that Shani McShani has left us as a producer, but we
yep.
wish her a lot of luck up in Camden.
Yes.
And we have upgraded the status of Emily Sully Sullivan. And Sully, great to have you here in the studio.
So glad to be here.
It's good to have you. She's booking the show, doing all kinds of great things with recaps. But I think we need to get to the Dan Foley interview.
Let's do it.
Again, CBS Wednesdays at 8 o'clock. Maine's very own Dan Foley lives in Gorham. Really fascinating story how he got involved or interested in Survivor. And then we'll see as the season goes on how he does. But
yeah.
for today, great interview. Here's my interview with Dan Foley. Welcome back to Tide Smart. Survivor. Great song, huh?
Great song.
Perfect song for our guest today.
Yeah.
He is a survivor. Please join me in welcoming Dan Foley, Maine native. And for any fans of the TV show of Survivor, he is on the current version of Survivor. I think there's been a couple episodes so far. Thanks for being in the studio, Dan.
Thanks for having me in.
I've got to tell you right from the start, I'm a big fan of the show Survivor. I'm actually kind of a big fan of a lot of reality shows. I was saying earlier, I follow The Bachelor, which is kind of a guilty thing, and then Big Brother and all that kind of stuff. Deb, however, goes to bed at 6 p.m. So,
oh, lame.
So she's not that familiar.
Yeah, well. When you're up at 2,
you'll sleep when you're dead. Come on.
I know.
Plenty of time then.
I was trying to tell her that. And, of course, we have Emily that you know. She mentioned earlier that you were her landlord at one point.
Yes. Yeah. Her and Katie Way.
That's fantastic. So she has been rebranded here. So she's no longer Emily. She's known as Sully Sullivan.
Sully.
So any reference, you just need to kind of reorient. It's Sully over there.
I don't look at Emily and think Sully. I just don't see that. That's not nice.
That's why it's a perfect Aww. Nickname. What? The perfect nickname is counterintuitive.
Not for girls. You can't do that, man. You gotta boost the self-esteem with them, you know?
Well, that's,
always... No, I'm okay with Sully. It's
are you all right?
I approved
with
it. It's a...
As long as you're okay with it, then I support it wholeheartedly,
okay.
right?
We're
well,
good.
Yeah, it wasn't forced on her. There was she participated in it. So she agreed with it. Hey, we've got a lot to cover because obviously it's exciting. You're on this network show and you're from here in Maine. But before we get to the show itself, why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, did you grow up in Maine and start a little bit about your personal background? And then we'll launch into the experience to the extent you can talk about
Thank you very much.
I
yes.
know there's a big
no
asterisk.
No future questions.
Since it's an active show and the way these things, you probably sign a 50-page document.
50? No, it's 156 pages long.
Okay.
It was crazy.
CBS will, you know, swoop down and, like, pull you out of here if you talk about, you know, any future episodes because it's taped months ago. So, you know, the viewing audience doesn't know what happened.
Correct.
But afterwards, of course, you can whisper in my ear, and I won't tell anyone.
Yeah, I haven't told my wife how things turned out. I am not telling you anything.
Okay. Well, we aren't that close yet, but we'll see. We've got about a half hour here to cover that. So talk a little bit about where you grew up and kind of like your background here in Maine, and then we'll talk about how you were first interested and, you know, ended up on Survivor.
Yeah. I was born and raised in Maine. I'm actually one of four kids. Philip and Teresa Foley, I'm actually an adopted child. They adopted all four of us. None of us are biologically connected. And I grew up in a house with a lot of love My dad worked at the post office, just like I do now. But he was a carrier, 34 years, busted his hide. My mom stayed home, took very good care of all of us.
What part of Maine did you grow up in?
Right in Portland, actually. Right at the end of Libby Town by St. Patrick's Church.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I've never lived really more than 20 miles from where I grew up. So I've just, Maine's in my blood. Once Maine's in your blood, you can't go anywhere else. I mean, I like to travel the country. I like to visit,
right.
You know, a lot of survivor casting calls, traveling for the post office, you know, to trainings and whatnot. But
well, we're going to post this interview on Facebook, Twitter. Billions of people are going to see this, Dan. That's
yes,
why.
Billions.
You're used to cameras, I'm guessing, from your experience on Survivor.
It sounds so pretentious, but it's like, oh, you get used to the cameras after a while.
You're
it's
a network
fine.
Star, Dan. Come on.
Yeah.
That's why we rolled out the water. There were M&M's in the lobby for you. Come on.
I thought that was for display. I didn't eat any of them. Wow. I could have had some.
Take a handful on the way out.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know if network star is really the word after the Dan Keeney incident. Yeah. I'm not a...
Well, we're going to cover all the incidents, but let's start with the background. You mentioned post office. You still with the postal service?
Yeah, I actually just kind of fumbled into it. I was working ski patrol at Sunday River, and I just happened to fill out an application for the post office for a Christmas temp job, and I got picked up, and I was literally driving back and forth from Sunday River to the post office. I'd work overnight at the post office, and I'd ski during the days at Sunday River.
Wow.
And it's like, I'm going to die. I have to make a choice. So I dropped Sunday River. I started in with the post office, and I've been there for 22 years.
That's great.
I genuinely love what I do. My coworkers are great, most of them.
Most of them.
The job that I do, I love it. You know, my bosses are great. I know I sound like an advertisement, but it's the truth.
No.
I genuinely love what I do.
I think that's great. Talk about, you know, you grew up in Maine and you're involved something in real estate. You were the landlord of Sully over here, and then you're involved in the post office, and you're involved with, you know, as an electrician.
I'm a notary. I'm a minister.
Like many Mainers, you cobble together a bunch of things, right? You just, Mainers kind of figure out how to do a bunch of things and make it work, right?
Yeah. My wife, Erin, calls me a jerk of all trades. So
well, that's a, you know, I
yeah, it's
I,
my I, wife, so she can get away with
I
that.
I couldn't even describe what Katie calls me, but now that would be an upgrade. So talk about, after all this, I've heard that for many, many years you applied to be on Survivor. That's part of the Dan or Danimal as your nickname. But part of the mythology is not just that you're on this year, but you tried so hard to get on. Talk a little bit about how many times you applied and then what the casting process was. And then ultimately, when was the turning point where at some point last year they said, hey, Dan, you're on the cast for this new one?
You know, I watched season one, episode one, and I had heard about this show, and I didn't think much about it, but I'm like, geez, that really sounds interesting. And I don't watch a lot of TV.
Wow.
But I saw that first episode. I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked on it. And I started applying for season two, and I've never stopped. And, you know, you would mention The Bachelor and some of the other shows. I don't watch any of those. Not a one.
Just Survivor.
Yeah. I really don't like reality TV. I think it's too focused on the drama as opposed to the people. And I think Survivor is more focused on the people. And I started sending in applications, making videos 14 years ago. Oh, now it's 15 years ago. I'm Irish. I'm stubborn. Don't tell me no. You know, the more I got to, you know, the more I heard nothing, the more I dug my heels in. And
funny.
Over the years, I've actually sent in over 100 applications, and I have physically driven to over 15 casting calls, over 25,000 miles across the country. And the thing about most survivors is that, you know, I've watch the finales, and some people's like, oh, I applied three times. Oh, I applied four times. Oh, wow, four times, big deal. But the casting made it very clear to me. There are people that have tried harder than I have, but nobody's ever gotten onto the show that's tried as hard as me.
Wow. We have Dan Foley. He's currently on Survivor on CBS. Deb,
yeah.
You admitted beforehand you don't watch, but there's another show on a cable channel, and I don't think it has the production value of Survivor, but at one point you mentioned you were trying out for Naked and Afraid. Have you tried?
Have you heard? Pretty good. It's a real show.
Have you heard of the show Naked?
Are you joking? I've been beat like a baby seal with this one. People have asked me to apply for the show.
Oh, you
can't get on Survivor. Try Naked. Listen, there isn't enough skinny in my dip. No, that's just no.
Let me think. I got to put that through the FCC processing. Skinny in your dip. I think that's fine.
A good one.
I think that's good.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I think that makes
the
air.
I know the radio rules. I got it.
But so, Deb, later on, you're going to have to tell us about the whole how you've done on that show.
Oh, yeah, sure. You betcha.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the stills on that one, Deb. I'm not going to lie.
No, it's all.
I am not going to lie, baby.
Well,
it really kind of. She's blushing over there. Well, I like that. That's good.
It takes a lot to make Deb blush. But yeah, it really, it's bare bones survival, so to speak.
Bare bones. That's good.
It's bare. Nothing but naked truth.
That's cute.
Naked truth in the wheel. Talk a little bit about the casting calls. So the application thing is probably an online thing, right? You send a picture, a video. You say, I'm Dan. I care about this. I'll be fun on TV. I'll do goofy things.
Blah, blah, right.
When you go to a casting call, what was the process and what was the thing that you think put you over the top this year that got you on the show?
It was 2008 that I had said something to my wife about it. And I said, I'm really thinking about stepping up my game. I want to go to these casting calls. I hear they're actually – there were rumors that they put casting agents like secretly in line to see what people were like and, you know, and whatnot. So I woke up on a Monday morning. It was Martin Luther King Day, wow. January 20th, 2008. I woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning and it had snowed that night. So I had to do all the plowing at all the properties, finished just in time, went to the post office, went online, saw there was a casting call on Wednesday in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. And I asked my boss for the rest of the week off. And he's like, why? I said, I'm going to go to these open casting calls. And he goes, you're a freaking idiot. And I said, this is what I want to do. And he goes, all right, fine. I called my wife up and I said, listen, I need some stuff, you know, and I had like applications and pictures and they wanted you to bring. She packed me a bag. She packed me food. She brought in my applications. She brought me in pictures and she came in, gave me a kiss. And she says, I wish you the best of luck. And off I went. And I drove until 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday afternoon. I was awake for 36 some odd hours, got a 1 hour nap and then finished to get down to Travelers Rest, was in line overnight, slept outside in January. And I was the 10th person in line and I did Travelers Rest that day. Then I did Myrtle Beach on Thursday. And then I drove up to Baltimore, Maryland, where I crashed with a buddy of mine for a few hours, Bill Beese. And then I drove from there up to Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. I drove 2,500 miles in 3 days to do 3 open casting calls. And that was the start of it.
Wow.
And every time there was availability and finances, I would go when I could.
But what was the casting experience? Like how many – was it just nice to meet you, Dan, and then you jumped in your car and went to the next place? Or what did they look for or did they try to engage you in to try to see if you'd be a good contestant?
The problem is that it's not Survivor that's there. It's like Kim Block is there. It's just the local CBS – I mean, not just the local, but it's you know, it's the local CBS affiliate.
Right.
All they're doing is taking a video and they send it to the mucky mucks at CBS, you know, at Survivor, who make decisions. So you never see the same people twice.
Right.
Some of the people that are trying out, you see them. And I actually met, you know, I became pretty big in the casting community. I started to know a lot of people and a lot of people started to know me. And actually one of the best stories, there was a casting call on February 28th, 2 years ago. In Las Vegas. And I wanted to go, but I had a training for the post office down in Oklahoma. And the last day of training was the day of the casting. There was no way I could make it. Now, my family, my job is way more important. Survivor for me was a passion, not an obsession. So I didn't go. And 3 days later, after I got home, I got a phone call and I didn't recognize the number. And I always answer a phone, Foley's Apartments, because if you're a telemarketer or something, I'm like, it's a business. Get off the phone.
Right.
So this woman says, hi, is this Dan Foley? And I said, yeah. She goes, oh, thank God I found you. And I said, okay, yep, who is this? And I feel bad. I don't remember her name now. But she said, you know, my name is Stephanie or whatever it was. And she said, oh, I went to that casting call in Las Vegas on the 28th. No kidding. How was it? Oh, it was great. I saw Barry. Oh, Barry from South Carolina. Oh, and I saw Francesca. Oh, from Pennsylvania. Oh, and I saw Woody. Oh, Woody from, and she listed like 8 or 10 people that I had met at other casting calls. And I said, oh, that's great. Why are you calling me? And she says, they spent so much time talking about you, I literally felt disappointed I never got to meet you. I spent the last 3 days surfing the internet, Facebook, looking for anybody that had your phone number just so I could call you and say hello. And
it
was
neat.
Yeah, it was actually very cool.
And we didn't go through nearly that trouble to get you in here today. I feel a little bit like...
Listen, Sully is friends with Emily. Sully is friends with Katie.
Yeah.
I love Katie. I would do anything for Katie.
Well, there you go.
It's true.
By the way, you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O and News Talk WLOB 1310 AM. We've got Dan Foley, who's currently on the CBS hit show Survivor, which is now season 30. So talk about, so you've gone through all this process. Some would consider it obsessive. Some would consider it a bit stalker-esque. Some would, but this last season, you were selected. How did you find out, and how do they inform contestants? Is it by phone? Does Jeff Probst show up?
No.
And how did you find out, and how much time did you have to get ready to go to Nicaragua?
I actually get a phone call for season 29, Blood versus Water. And just about everybody got a phone call for that season because the cast was not great. It was not a good cast. And I'm very grateful that I didn't go on that show. But I didn't have a loved one to bring. My wife and I both couldn't be gone. So when you say no to these Hollywood types, it made me pretty nervous that they would never call me back. But 2 months later, I got a call again for season 30. And they called me on a Wednesday. And 3 days later, I was in L.A. And then you have to go through the whole casting process, which I'm not allowed to talk about. That's definitely part of the contract. I mean, this obviously this physical, mental, psychological camera testing that you go through.
Sure.
And they want to make sure that you've got the personality that's large enough to be on television. They at the end of the day, this is a game, but it's a TV show. And they want people to watch. And I am not the typical body type that they cast for this show. I am not pretty. I am not a good-looking guy.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. No, come on.
Don't suck up to me. I'm already here, all right? Don't bother.
Dan, no. No. Deb.
I would not agree with that statement.
No, I would say earthy. I would say you're earthy.
I am grounded, to say the least. But
like me, you look like you're a guy who enjoys a good donut.
Tony's Donuts? Hell yeah. Oh, I dream about Tony's.
Tony's.
Oh, yeah. Even Sully's nodding. Hell yeah. That's right.
Oh.
I go to Oklahoma and I'm gone for any length of time, I'll tell you right now, you know what food I missed?
What?
An Italian sandwich and a Tony's chocolate sugar donut. And Humpty Dumpty all-dressed potato chips. I could not wait to get those three.
Old school?
Yeah. Oh, man. I mailed those chips all over the country. My castaways wanted those chips in the worst way. Oh, awesome. Just love them.
Are you going to bring those to the final?
Actually, if I don't, they're shipping me home. I'm not going to be there. They said they actually threatened me.
Wow.
If I don't bring those chips with me, I can't come.
I love it.
So in California, I kind of like the technical aspect of this. So you went through a whole casting thing that you can't talk about, but generally people can assume. After that point, so they've got a group of people, they do all the testing.
Yep.
How do you get... show at what point do they say you are one of how many people are
18 on my season?
So there's 18 on the current season. You are one of the 18.
Yes.
And then how much time between then getting ready to go to Nicaragua?
It was about a month, which I was kind of surprised at. I didn't think they'd give me that much time. And my boss at work, Mark Hanscom, I'm not supposed to tell anybody,
right?
You know, I mean, my family had to sign non-disclosure agreements, but I'm not supposed to tell anybody.
Sure.
And I had to go to my boss to talk to him about it. You know, because I felt so positive about my final round interviews. I felt like I made it. I really felt like I had done it. And I had to talk to him about getting a leave of absence, and he was spectacular. My boss was great. He was really very just accepting and opening, and he figured it out. I said nothing to him, and I just simply said I needed a leave of absence for a personal reason. He asked me for how long. And he goes, can you tell me why? And I says, no. I said, it's of a personal nature and I can't talk about it.
I know, but knowing for 6 years you've been a fanatic and you've driven all over, North America.
14 years, it not would, six.
Yeah, but it wouldn't take the amazing Kreskin to go, I wonder what Dan is up to.
Yeah, and he figured it out very quickly. And he's also a big fan, so he was very excited for me. And
you just mentioned his name on the Steve-O show.
Well, I had to throw props.
For our millions of listeners.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean,
it's fantastic.
Woo, that's
okay, so now you're picked. You're selected.
Yep.
It's a month. They oversee all the travel, all the transportation.
Yep.
you leave out of Portland.
Yes.
Where exactly do you go, and how do they keep all of the castmates separate, segregated? Because you don't meet. It looks on the show like you don't meet until you're going into the location. Is that – can you even talk about – but where – so you land somewhere in Nicaragua. You're in a different room. You probably have a production handler that takes care of you and feeds you and makes sure. And then you're dropped off somewhere and you meet 17 other people, and all of a sudden everybody's kind of geeked up. What's that process, just the mindset? What's that like?
There's something called pregame, and it's about a week before the show starts. Yeah. And it's actually very similar to a hostage situation. We're at this ghetto resort that looks like it got hit by a hurricane, but they kind of cleaned it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And we're all sleeping in tents, like literal Boy Scout pup tents. And you're not supposed to talk to anybody. You're not supposed to look at anybody. You're not supposed to have lingering looks at anybody.
But they're
no
there.
Hand
the
signals.
The other contestants.
Yeah,
other,
we're all there together.
But you're not supposed to. But at the corner of your eye, you're like, I can take that person.
Oh, God, yeah.
Or, yeah, that
absolutely.
Person's
absolutely. You're making prejudgments about people.
Or
instantly.
She's placing head games. Yeah, I'm not going to. And then you're exporting your own head games.
Absolutely.
Because you're a Danimal.
And it makes that, you know, and I'm walking around listening to my Harry Potter books because I get bored. So I've got my old school Walkman CD player. I've got my Harry Potter books on disc, and everybody's just laughing at me.
Were you the oldest or the second oldest on this season?
I'm the oldest man, but the third oldest person. Both Carolyn and Nina are older than I. Carolyn was the oldest.
Gotcha.
And a lot of people have asked me about the casting process and what it takes. What did I finally do?
Right.
And a friend of mine that I'd met at a casting call, actually, and he said he had this idea for a video. And he's like, just talk. Talk about anything. Nothing to do with Survivor. Just talk. And I thought about that. And I said, geez, that's a really interesting idea. And I remember an interview years ago, and I can't even remember who it was with. It was either Jeff Probst or Mark Burnett. And they had said that you could take the most interesting story in the world and give it to a poor storyteller, and they will bore you. Or you can take the most mundane, just nothing story, but you give it to a gifted storyteller. He'll have you laughing, crying on the edge of your seat. And I'm like, I can do that. I can spin a web. I'm an Irishman. I can tell a story. So I just got in front of the camera, and I told a story about how I was responsible for the landing of a commercial airliner. And that was just like that. I got a phone call, and that was for season 29. And I had to turn that down. Well, then the rumors.
Well, back up one sec. You were responsible for the landing of a commercial airliner?
Yeah.
Okay, what's that?
Says it like it. We're doesn't everybody?
Well, yeah, because I've often in my mind as I fly around think, you know, both pilots fall asleep and I'm like, hey, I've watched TV, I can do this. But what was your story?
So I'm sitting on an airplane. I'm a great flyer. I'm drooling before we're off the tarmac.
And that's a good thing?
Yeah, oh yeah.
You're drooling.
I'm sleeping.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I'm sound asleep to
gotcha.
The point where I'm drooling.
I didn't know where you're going.
Not like, you know, I'm just, right. I'm sleeping.
Sleeping.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I'm sound asleep and I'm wearing a shirt that says U.S. Postal Service on it.
Right.
And this guy to my left, I'm in the window, and this guy starts poking me. And he goes, excuse me, sir, do you have any medical training? And I said, what? And he said, do you have any medical training? I was an EMT. I was a ski patrol. I'm still AED certified. He goes, really? Ding! Calls a stewardess. Stewardess comes over, asks me the same questions. I give her the same answers. She goes, you're an EMT? She grabs me by the elbow. Come with me, please. And I stand up, and I'm like, what's going on? She goes, there's a gentleman in the front of the plane that's having chest pains. Would you mind taking a look? And I have this look of incredulity on my face. And I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, I said, you have a plane full of people and I'm the best you came up with? Are you joking?
That was my thought too.
What the hell? The guy's going to die anyway. Sure, I'll go take a look.
Yeah.
So I go up and I kneel down in front of the guy because you don't want to look down on him. You know, he feels intimidated. So I kneel down and I introduce myself and he introduced himself to me. Now another woman comes up.
Right.
Turns out she's a CNA. I'm still more qualified than she is.
You outrank her.
Right. So I asked him what's going on. He goes, well, I'm hot. I'm sweaty. My head hurts. My chest hurts. Oh, yeah. I had a valve replaced in my heart about a year and a half ago. Oh, right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I had the same reaction.
I had a valve. Yeah.
Yes. So I look at the stewardess and I said, don't you folks carry like a portable tank of oxygen on the plane? And she looked at me. She goes, yes, with that little blonde head cock thing going on. And I'm like, well, perhaps you should go get that. Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, you're a medical technician, of course.
No,
oxygen.
I'm not. I'm whatever.
The EMT, so ski patrol, I heard it all.
So she shows up with the oxygen. I put the mask on and crank it open. Now I start asking him questions. The more you talk, the more you breathe. I'm checking his heart rate, you know, his pulse. I'm checking his respiratory. What's the last time he ate? What meds does he use? And all of it's just basic stuff. So he starts talking about his trip to Oklahoma and everything else. Now, we flew from Chicago to Oklahoma. That's where we were going.
Right.
So he's talking about all this. And after about 10 minutes or so, I said, how do you feel? Oh, he says, I feel much better now. And he says, my head doesn't hurt. I mean, he said, my chest doesn't hurt so much. He said, I feel a lot better, but I'm still hot. So I stand up and I look at the stewardess and I look at the CNA. And I said, listen, I said, I was sleeping back there. And I said, when I woke up, I was sweating. I said, I think the plane is just hot. I think he started spinning in his own head. I think he made something out of nothing. I really don't think this is anything. However, I'm a postal worker. I'm not a doctor. We should at least discuss the possibility of exploring the option of thinking about considering landing the plane. And as soon as those words came out of my mouth, the stewardess grabbed the phone to the cockpit, called the captain and said, Captain, the postal worker thinks we should land the plane. And down we went. And when we landed, we landed in Kansas City. We only made it half the distance. So we had twice the fuel. So we landed overweight. All the safety gear on the landing equipment tripped. So yeah. What should have been a 5-minute turn and burn turned into almost a 2-hour fiasco waiting for engineering to show up and everything else. Oh, I called back to the post office and these people have beat me without mercy ever since. They have made fun of me endlessly.
That is a good story.
That's a great story.
I would put you on the show based on that. And we have Dan Foley here. He's on the current season of Survivor on CBS. What night is that on again? Is that
Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock on CBS.
How many more Wednesday nights can people look forward to seeing you on there?
There are, I can't answer that question.
Very good, Steve.
That's good. I should walk out now. I told you no future-based questions. I should leave you hanging.
That wasn't a future-based.
How many episodes can they expect to see you on? That is a completely future-based question.
Let me, Sully,
get the whipping stick out. He's got to get it.
Oh, Sully, I didn't do it.
I made her blush now, too. That's good.
A little bit.
Two for two.
But Dan, at the beginning of every episode, regardless if you're voted off, you know, tribal council or not, don't they show all the members of the cast?
Not always. Sometimes the episode is so long they have an abbreviated opening segment. So they don't always show everybody.
But generally, it is 18 cast members. So towards the end of the show, they still give everyone a taste, right?
No.
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 See, that was my mistake. I wasn't trying to get a future thing out
of
it.
Way to go, Captain Backpedal. It's not working. All right? It's not working.
What I was thinking was, you know, that was just a simple little... You know,
Yeah.
I wasn't even going to ask you what, you know...
How much weight did I lose or anything else like that?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, thank you. No, I'm not going to answer that either.
Did you put on weight?
I'm not going to answer that either.
Okay, can you talk about your bathing suit coming off last week?
Yes, that I can talk about.
Okay. How does that happen?
First of all... The whole thing was 100% true. It was not faked. It was not farced. It was not preconceived. It was not anything else. I was literally in a panic over this.
Your bathing suit coming
out? It wasn't a bathing suit. It was underwear.
Oh, yeah.
That was my underwear.
Yeah, I've got a picture of that.
Yes, thank you. Okay. I've got several. Thank you.
So is that the underwear shot?
Or no.
Is that different?
That's my shirt.
Oh, your shirt
my
is covered.
Underwear is gone at that point. So I can't walk around in those jeans raw dogging it because they're just going to tear me apart.
Of course.
So I'm literally just sitting off to the side in nothing short of a panic about what I'm going to do. And I'm a Mainer, so you got to make do with what you got. So I turn my shirt backwards. I put my legs through the armholes. I pull it up, I wrap a belt around my waist, and I drop the rest of it down to cover it. It's not a skirt, it's a kilt. So,
So Scottish. The UK's coming out. Well, isn't part of – I've watched seasons where, whether it's strategy or whether it's just shamelessness, a lot of the members either – you know, I don't want to say they just walk around kind of nude, but people have different levels of modesty because you're out there and you're – You know, even though it's a game show and there's TV and stuff, at a certain point when you're out there for a number of days, I'm not even going to ask you how many days you were out because you're too sharp for that.
All 39 days, actually. Whether you're first off or the winner, everybody's there all 39 days.
Oh, that's a good part. I want to follow up. But if you're out there, just being out there, you're in survival mode. And modesty goes out the window at certain like day one or three. And at some point you're like, hey, I've lost weight. I'm sitting here. I don't care if I'm bare-ass naked or not.
For some people, it was like that. In last episode, you saw Max and Shireen from the White Collar Tribe, who basically embraced their no-collar side, and they were running around naked.
Really?
Yeah. And apparently you didn't watch the show. Ouch. Never mind.
I watched your highlights, Dan. Uh-huh. I focus on the good parts.
Don't bother, Captain Backpedal. It's not happening.
I fast forward away
from
it.
Not happening.
We call that inert ingredients.
Uh-huh.
What you did was the core.
And now I just made you blush.
No.
I am 3 for 3.
No, not even
blushing.
That's
right.
So people just want, you know, but
some people just, they like that. And what they didn't show for me was we had gone down by the river. Yeah. And it's so hot. I mean, I'm a man. I can take the cold all day long, but I don't like the heat. I don't do well in the heat.
Right.
And I stood there and I started to take my pants off because I needed to get into the river to cool off. And I literally stood there and I said, I apologize to my wife and my dad and my coworkers.
But do you have to have that discussion with your wife before you go? And I don't know what
I did.
The temperature is Nick Wire, but typically in these shows, at some point, somebody's cuddling with somebody, not necessarily for romance, but
that's
survival.
That's a great comment.
But do you talk to your wife beforehand and say, and does she go, yeah, you can cuddle with somebody named Frank, Bob, or Mark, but I don't want you cuddling with Susie, Nancy, or
Bubbles,
know.
Taffy,
yeah,
Bambi, Thump, right.
So,
it's funny because I told my wife, I mean, I literally get into bed at night and the room rises in temperature by 10 degrees. And that's how warm I am.
You're a warm human
being. I am
a
walking furnace.
You
literally
give off heat.
A ton of it. So I told my wife, I said, listen, you have to understand, I'm going to be at the bottom of the cuddle puddle every night. And she said, that's fine as long as you're not touching any pink parts. And I said, no problem.
Oh, man.
The bottom.
How's that for perfect radio?
That's amazing.
The right? Bottom of a cuddle puddle. So
bottom of the cuddle pot, and my
did you end up at the bottom? I don't want to get into the parts.
Oh, no. It's
but you were was it cold at night in Nicaragua?
By whose perspective? I live in Maine.
Yeah,
you know, 55 degrees and rain, and people are like, it's so cold outside. Yeah, shut up. It's not cold. Let's go swimming in the Atlantic in January. That's cold.
Right.
You know, so, but some, I mean, they cast girls that weigh, you know, 17 pounds and they're size -3. So, yeah, people out there are freezing in that type of weather.
Right.
There was.
And you helped them up with cuddling.
I told the people, I said, listen, I'm going to be nice. I said, if you want to stay warm, just get near me. Nothing creepy. I'm just trying to be generous. I'm telling you, you're going to be warm. And not just the girls, but the guys were curled up to me at night. And they didn't, because they were freezing. They're just cold out there. People don't know how to deal with that. But for me, I had no issues. I had no problems. That wasn't cold at all. So, and my wife, God bless her, she trusts me. And I give her no reason to doubt me. And that's the reason why. So she is so much better than a bum like me deserves.
Well,
and today is her birthday. So happy birthday to my beautiful wife, Erin.
Well, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
So is today Friday? We're taping this on Friday because it'll air tomorrow. So is it Saturday or Friday is her birthday?
It's today.
Today. So
it is today.
There you go.
Well, it was yesterday.
It was yesterday.
Because this will air tomorrow.
So yesterday was my wife's birthday.
Well,
so a very happy birthday to my lovely wife, Erin.
Oh, great. So you thought this out and had a conversation. She gave you the green light for the cuddle puddle thing.
She gave me the green light to say and do anything I needed to.
But fantastic. But for other members of, by the way, this round of Survivor, you know, typically there are themes, and this one has a blue collar, white collar, and no collar.
Yes.
So there's three different tribes.
Yep.
And relating to people with more of a professional background, working background, or no collar. But was there romance out there at all? Did you say, not with you.
Future-based question.
Well, while you were there, I'll give you an answer. While, up until the second episode that aired, did you see any love in the air? Did you see, were people maybe not cuddling so innocently as you? Were there colder nights requiring more, friction or something?
The thing about Survivor is that when you have three tribes, I can only see 1/3 of everything that goes on. But out of the one third that I can see, you're lucky if you can see 25% of what's going on in your own tribe. So you can only see 25% of one third. That's a very small percentage. This game is substantially bigger than people think about, because as you sit home and you're eating your Cheetos and you're drinking your Dr. Pepper, you see everything.
God, that's exactly how I watch it. That is unbelievable. Everybody knows that, but Cheetos and Dr. That's fantastic.
Yeah, see, I'm also a savant.
And, yeah, you
well,
are.
An idiot savant. But
no.
We've got
Dan Foley, who is on the current version of Survivor on Wednesdays on CBS. There's been a couple episodes. From your experience, not a future question, because I know CBS, Les Moonves is over. You know, Burnett is over there. They've got parabolic mics.
They have my soul, so I have to be careful.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. But from your experience, television kind of conveys the physical dimension of Survivor, but there's a huge mental, emotional part. What part of your experience was the biggest surprise for you? Was it in the physical realm of adapting to the environment? Was the mental kind of strategy, or was it the emotion of, you know, you're in a faraway place with a bunch of strangers and TV and there's different kind of things? What element surprised you the most as a Survivor expert?
You can try to prepare yourself as much as you want for the food, the water, the sleep, the bugs, the heat. You can try all you want, and you'll never be able to wrap your head around it. There's just no way you can. Unless you subject yourself to that level of deprivation, you just can't. The one thing that I knew that I would struggle with, but I really didn't realize just how badly it was going to hurt, was my wife.
Oh, wow.
Seriously, I missed her. Like, I just couldn't even. I mean, I travel the country and I do a lot of things, but we can always talk.
Well, there's
we
no
can
get communication. On the phone. There's
Nothing.
No communication when you're in the game, but
no.
During the pre-camp
no.
or after?
No.
So it's a complete blackout period.
They took our phones before we left the country. And actually, there's a new law now that you can't actually come back into the country with a phone that's dead. You have to be able to turn that phone on so they know that it's an actual phone.
Right.
So they took our phones before we left the country, and we didn't get them back until we came back into the country.
Does production give updates, family updates?
Is no. There any,
so there's no...
Nothing. Nothing. I mean, when I say blackout, I mean blackout.
Wow.
There is no communication. So, I mean, I'm a guy that falls into a bucket of dew and smells like roses. And that's one of the things my wife said she fell in love with me about. So whenever she comes into the house and she smells roses, she'll look at me and glare and she goes, "What did you do?"
Yeah.
You know, but
it's very endearing. I've noticed that about
you
too, the whole
that.
Rose thing. You mentioned before about the experience, which I wasn't aware of. So when you're in the game and if you're voted off at tribal council, I love the tribal councils. You've got to watch just for that, Deb.
Yeah, sure.
It is, there's drumbeat music, there's, you know.
Dramatic. Oh, yeah, themes.
There's themes and somebody's got an immunity idol or necklace and then Jeff Probst and it's all very serious and it's like they vote people off and then there's the walk of shame. So you mentioned that whether or not you go all the way to the end or whether or not you're voted off early – that you stay there in a compound or something. So there must be CBS or Burnett Productions has a big production compound where, you know, they must have 100 people that are, you know, that the camera doesn't see putting the stuff on. And so they set up a separate camp. So as people are voted off, does the food get better and the living situations get better? You know?
I can't answer that.
Oh, okay.
I'm not allowed to.
Oh, because that, okay.
I can't answer anything like that at all.
But,
I'm sorry. I know this sucks. I know.
No,
it's a pain in the backside.
But if it's wonderful with gourmet food and masseuses, you just nod your head a little bit. Wow.
Hey, how about those Patriots? Did you see that?
They
one,
were amazing.
Huh? That 1 yard interception,
yeah,
right?
Oh, that was fantastic.
Huh?
Well, you did not at all. We've got Dan Foley here, who, if CBS is monitoring this, is doing a fantastic job.
Yes, they are.
And I'm sure better interviewers than me have tried to crack the code with survivors over decades.
I got to tell you, if you continue, I'm going to 50 Shades of Grey you, okay? You got to smarten up, all right? Seriously,
well,
no future questions.
I don't think we've heard that in the studio. I don't think
you're welcome.
I don't think we've heard that reference, Dan Foley. Can you talk about, so the final show is scheduled for when? I haven't even looked at it.
Don't know. They won't tell me.
The broadcast date?
Don't know.
but it happens sometime in a couple months.
Yeah, it's going to be sometime around May 20th, we're presuming.
Right.
I don't know. They won't. We keep asking. I need to plan to get time off from work so I can go to the finale, and they won't tell me.
So the finale, so when was it taped? September, October?
Beginning of August into the middle of September.
Okay. So it was taped then in the way that Survivor works for anyone listening like Deb that doesn't know.
Okay.
There's two. It's whittled down from 18 down to two.
Sometimes
more. So at some point at the end of this show, there's two or more who are the final survivor. And mm-hmm. then at the taping, it morphs from Jeff Probst saying, okay, you guys are the final, and there's a whole, you walk through the remains of the players who are off, and then people celebrate, and they kind of, and then all of a sudden it morphs into a live helicopter thing with Probst coming down into L.A. holding the jar.
The urn, yes.
The urn with the final votes.
Correct.
And then those are read live. But
yep.
they're read live 7 months after the thing happened.
Yes.
So there's a little bit of a suspension of reality in terms of, but nobody knows the votes. They're hidden away. Nobody knows the votes.
Nope. We don't know how this whole thing turned out.
But when the game ended, you still have 18 people. Did you fly back together? Did somebody elbow somebody and said, how did you do? I did this. So you know, depending on if you're the jury or not, which you're not even going to blink when I say the word jury. It's fantastic. You're not even making facial expressions. This is fantastic. But when it ended, is there a little bit are you depressed? Because there's so much intensity. In your particular case, you spent a decade, drove around the world, you slept on sidewalks, you've been in applications, your wife was so supportive, that some guy at the Postal Service whose name you mentioned or I forgot, your boss was so, and then all of a sudden they call you and you go down, you take a physical, you get some shots for dysentery, and you lose some weight. You look fantastic now, by the way. And then all of a sudden the show ends, and then you go back to the postal office, and do you decompress? What's the world of Dan like now that it's over, except for the final party, which I would love to go out to L.A. with you. So if you get a plus one, plus your wife, count me in.
Yes.
If you make it a plus two, like you get your wife, you get me, and we'll fly out.
I have a list of people that have asked that's longer than this building to go to the finale with me.
I know, but with as close as we are.
But you and I have that kismet thing.
As close as we are, we got to prioritize on this. But seriously, what's the adjustment? Is it one of relief and you feel great? You climbed your Mount Olympus and it was this great thing? Or is it like, okay, it's like you're a little deflated because it was a great experience, I can tell, but it's over now. What's the feeling?
When the whole thing's over, there's definitely, you said the perfect word, you said decompress. But part of me really wanted to get back into my normal routine. I work during the day as an electrician as an electrical apprentice, really. I work with my electrician and then the post office and all that. I took a few days off after I got back, went to the doctor, very thorough physical to make sure I was okay. Several people had some issues, parasites, parasitic worms, some kidney issues. One guy had some liver problems. It's the real deal.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you see. We don't get spit out there. And we're expected to be able to survive given the circumstances that we are thrown in. But, you come back and my bucket list is constantly evolving. I see something I want to do and I go and I'll do it. And some things take more time than others, but this one obviously took a lot more time. But I can say I did it. And I know a lot of people are saying, I hope you win. I hope you do great. I hope you go far. I hope you do this. All my wife said was congratulations. You know, my coworkers were the same way. Actually, Debbie LaFrance probably said it best to me. She came up, and what I told everybody, I got back, and I was telling people all kinds of lies about what I was in rehab, I'm a sex addict, I was all these, I was in a rock band, I was a groupie, whatever. I went to do a porn shoot. I told everybody everything.
So none of those things are true?
No. Now I can admit it.
Okay, yeah.
So Deb comes up to me, and she had tears in her eyes. And she came up and she hugged me and she just whispered in my ear. She said, I am just so proud of you. And I told her one of my typical lies. And then she literally, she slapped me. She goes, you were on Survivor. I know it. Stop lying to me. Just shut up and listen. Okay. And I just sat there. And she says, it's not just, she goes, it's the world today. People don't chase their dreams anymore. And you did it. You did it passionately. You did it responsibly, not obsessively like you used earlier, Steve-O.
Did I say obsessively?
Yes, you did. Don't think that's escaped me. Anyway, she said, you did it passionately and you did it. She goes, I don't care if you were the first one voted off. I don't care if you won $1 million. You did it. And that all by itself is inspirational. And I started to cry because
that's
it was
nice.
It really was. It was, I mean, a lot of people have phrased very similar congratulatory statements at me, but she really said it so touchingly, and it just really meant so much to me. And it wasn't my intention, but a lot of people have been very gracious, and they've been very complimentary, and they've been very kind to express very similar, comments mm-hmm. towards me. And I'm just so grateful for the support of friends, family. I've seen parts of this country I never would have seen. Mm-hmm. I've met people that I never would have met, and they're friends with me forever. And most people that get on Survivor, they appreciate it. There's very few people that have been on it that won't go back because their experience was just so bad. But for me, the destination was great, but the journey, that was amazing. And
by the way, we've been joking around. We've got Dan Foley here who's on the current version of Survivor. I have all the respect and admiration for what you did, and I'm not going to get weepy like the woman who whispered in your ear, because that was a little more of a personal message. But I agree. Chasing your dreams and following through on something and approaching it with not being obsessive.
Correct.
But being focused, being committed, being, chasing something down. I think the world of it.
And it doesn't matter. I mean, honestly, it could be small or it could be big. I mean, like I said, if I sat down and wrote down all the bucket item lists, all items that I've been able to check off.
Right.
I mean, some have been, small. I climbed Mount Washington in the middle of a winter. I climbed the highest mountain peaks in each one of the New England states. I've driven across this country. I had a co-ed buy me lunch in Topeka, Kansas,
A co-ed buy you lunch in Topeka, Kansas?
Yeah.
There you go.
Life is supposed to be a series of experiences to enjoy, to relish. Why would you not go out there and find something? No matter how silly it is, it's not silly to you. Who cares if it's silly to everybody else? I am a fat, bald, ugly guy with a stupid beard, and I could care less because I got a smile on my face, I got a song in my heart, and I got a woman that loves me. So why wouldn't I go out there and have as much fun as I possibly can? And if you want to laugh at me, that's on you. I don't care, because for the most part, if you don't mean anything to me, your opinion doesn't matter to me. But if Aaron gives me a hard time, well, then that matters,
I think that's great. That's why you, Aaron, and I are going to the final. Because
that's
we
great.
All share
yeah,
that.
I cannot wait for you to get your own ticket.
We've got Dan Foley. He is a Maine native, lives in Gorham, and he's on the current Survivor on CBS. Hey, in the next couple of minutes, we've talked about the experience in terms of, we started with talking about you growing up in Maine and then some of the work you've done. And Survivor has, I'm sure, because it's just such an epic adventure, and it's now that it's on television, there's a lot of attention that's been drawn to you. You've done a lot of interviews, newspaper stuff. Maybe nothing quite as big as Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O.
Oh, this is monumental.
Some people have been intimidated when they've come into the studio. Not you, my friend. I think that is fantastic way to, way to man up on this whole interview thing, right, Deb?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, millions of listeners. Some people get a little wobbly. No.
I got Deb and Sully looking on. How can I be anything but confident? It's true.
And if I tried to ask like an aggressive question or ask you what the final tribal thing was or what are you going to do with $1 million, they wouldn't let me.
No.
They wouldn't. They're like, you can't ask Mm-mm. future things. Don't you know the whole rule thing? But even the
How do you guys put up with him? Seriously.
We're used to it.
Is that it? Funny, my wife does the same thing with me. That's
See,
good.
On the rule thing, and I don't want to get technical because I respect the obviously I respect rules because I love rules. But for you to be this disciplined, it had to be more than signing. They had to put you in like 2 days with like, you know, psychologists and lawyers and say, you can't do this or this or this happens or we don't pay you this or you won't be eligible to be on the next show. There's got to be such tetronic pressure to be as disciplined as you are not to say this. Is it come from your respect for the show or is something really awful going to happen if you go, yeah, I was sixth, seventh guy out?
You know, it's a lot of it is, I mean, of course, in the back of your mind, you're worried that, you know, the CBS gods will come down upon you. But the truth of the matter is I genuinely just respect the game. I do. I want to make sure that, okay, I'm going to throw a spoiler. You ready? Oh, you just your ears just perked.
Yeah, I was looking over here, yeah.
It's like telling somebody that Bruce Willis is actually dead at the beginning of The Sixth Sense, and it ruins the whole movie. Why would you do that?
That's
why
your spoiler.
Would you thank you. Why would you take that away from somebody? Ah, I tricked you, didn't I? No, seriously, why would you take that kind of enjoyment away from somebody? I want people to watch the show. I want people to enjoy it. I want people to enjoy it with me. We're having another Survivor party on Wednesday night at the Stockhouse in Westbrook. Come, watch the show with me. Make fun of me firsthand. Every week, if you look at my Facebook page, I will be saying we will have a Survivor party, which has no bearing on how I will do in the show. I just want to have people enjoy the experience with me. That's it. And I want to enjoy it with them. So we had Emily was there with Katie. We had 50 people show up at Thatcher's on Wednesday night. Next Wednesday, we're at the Stockhouse. On the 18th, we're going to be at Thatcher's in South Portland. And on the 25th, we're going to be at Binga's Wingers. And from there, I'm going to reassess the restaurants, what had the best service, the best setup, the best volume, the best TVs. And then I'll repost where we're going to go from there. So please, Steve-O, to have a main celebrity like you, I'm nothing compared to you, Steve-O.
Hey, come on, Dan.
Stop.
More, Dan, more. Does CBS stay in touch with you during this period? And obviously, there's some planning and logistics with the final show. But how much reinforcement do they, you know, do you have a handler? Do you have somebody that calls you and says, you know, Blue Dog, this is Red Devil, you're doing great. Is there anything like that?
No, they kind of slowed down at a street corner and kicked me out and off they went kind of thing. But no, I mean, they don't have any interaction with us at this point, unless we're doing something wrong. And then they'll reach out and go, hey, knock it off. We're watching. So,
Burnett and Les Moonves, they all know this interview. They're monitoring it, and there's some intern transcribing it. So when I tell them that you nodded at certain points and
you're
slipping me notes,
they won't believe you.
Hey, it's been such a treat having you here. I wish you nothing but luck on the show. And regardless of where you place, I hope you win the $1 million. But regardless, it sounds like it's been a great experience. That really comes across from how you describe it. And regardless what happens with Survivor, I hope that all of your dreams and all the stuff that you're doing, you know, is equally gratifying and you're as enthusiastic and you're a fun person to meet.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And, you know, for people, again, this is Dan Foley. He's on the current Survivor. Wednesday nights, is it 8 p.m.? I think it's 8 p.m.
8 p.m. CBS.
And this next Wednesday, people are invited to come out and meet you and kind of watch the show, cheer it on, see what happens.
Heckle me. Sure. Throw stuff at me. I'm in. I'm down with it. That's fine.
So good to have you. And sometime later in the season, if your schedule allows, love to have you come back and maybe at the end of it, give an update when you can talk more fully. And then we can go into some of the details.
That sounds like it would be a lot of fun, Steve.
It would. Thank you very much, Dan Foley. You're listening to Tidesmart Talk with Steve-O and News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. We're gone for the next 2 weeks. We'll be reporting from the Pacific West studio in Maui from the beautiful Kanapali Beach. But then we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back.